Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. PRN indeed is moving forward. I'm really, really delighted and honored to be a part of it. Such important programming in an age of deceit and deception and duplicity. I write about this stuff all the time. We talk about it on this program. We'll talk about plenty during the next hour with my guest, Finian Cunningham. But it's shocking. You turn on your TV set and you get the usual you-know-what. And why anybody wastes their time with it, I don't know. The only good news is the numbers are going down. I hope they continue going down. But the ratings of the TV broadcasters and the cable channels, they're not doing as well as they used to do. Maybe people are slowly catching on. That's the one big business in America that ordinary people can shut down if they want to. And these people are defenseless against us. How do you defeat them? You just tune them out. No eyeballs, no programs. Now, wouldn't that be wonderful? I've got nothing against a good sporting event once in a while, or maybe a film that's worth watching. Not too many of them on television, but once in a while something half-decent may come up. They put me to sleep every night for about 15 minutes. I really don't know what they're doing, because I come in the middle of something and I leave very quickly. But they put me to sleep, so at least it's good for that purpose. For me, it works better than hot milk. But that's the way to shut these people down. But PRN is so different. Finian, it's great to have you on. And I'll just tell my listeners that you're a man of many talents. You're a musician. You're a writer. You're an activist. When you're not in a remote corner of the world, you're based in Northern Ireland. You've done research firsthand in Bahrain. You're on the Horn of Africa now. Oh, you may turn up anywhere, and you turn out absolutely marvelous articles that are must-read. And, well, you've written recently about Bahrain again. You've written about Mali. Let's talk just for a moment before we get into those and whatever else is on your mind. Today, for the second time, I've written about what's going on in Bani Walid in Libya. We talked about it Friday on this program. I think it's important to talk about it again. There's a genocide being committed there, literally genocide, and it's either ignored in the major media or it's completely distorted, understated, misreported. You know the way the print and TV, I don't think, is even mentioning it. I don't follow TV, so I can't be sure what they're doing or not doing it. But my guess is that they're saying nothing. And if you read the London Guardian or the New York Times, the Washington Post doesn't even do its own stories. The few it has on Libya, they pick up an AP report. And, well, AP is a World Wire service. Reuters gives it a little bit of coverage. BBC covers it. But I tuned in to BBC, Finian, about an hour ago to see what they were featuring on their TV broadcast. Well, I followed it for about 15 minutes. Neither Libya nor Bani Walid was mentioned. The one TV operation that's giving it marvelous coverage is Russia Today. And if anybody can't get Russia Today on their TV lineup, my cable company surprisingly picks it up so I can get it. But anybody can get Russia Today online, RT.com. It's their feature story day after day after day. And they're spending a good deal of time on it.
Yeah.
And they're saying, explaining what really is happening. There's genocide being committed there. People are being massacred. It's coming in all kinds of forms. It's coming from I don't know, missiles, bombs, shells from tanks, people on the ground, death squads, Western recruited death squads that to some extent are going house to house and murdering people, civilians. And this is going on. Nobody knows how many people have died. Who can know? They're bulldozing homes. There are dead bodies underneath the rubble. Nobody's going in there to count them. Nobody ever will. But there could be thousands of people killed. People want to get out. They can't get out. People who fled when they could can't get back in again. There's not enough food. There's not enough water. The power is out. The ICRC, which is more a scam operation than a legitimate one, it's on the wrong side of the Syrian conflict, Finian. It's on the wrong side of this one, and I quote them in my article, but let me let you jump in. The program is for you, not me.
Yeah. Well, so it's given on. I just said it before we start, Stephen. Can you hear me okay? Because we will not bore your listeners with too many technical details, but we had a wee connection problem earlier on. Can you hear me now, Stephen, okay?
You're coming in a little choppy, Finian. I'm not certain I understood you.
Can you hear me, Stephen?
I can hear you. It's a little choppy, but repeat what you said, and I hope my listeners can hear okay.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, you covered so much ground there. It would take me another hour or two to fill out what you were saying, but I think you started off by saying about the mass media, the corporate media, the ratings going down, the readership going down. That's great news, and it's well-deserved, because they don't tell the public very much at all about what's going on in the world. And I think your advice, that idea of boycotting the media is a great bit of advice. I mean, if people just en masse switched off or stopped buying these rags, it would have a very big impact on the whole media, field. But it's it'd be great fun to see it, Stephen, people just stop tuning in and reading this garbage,
Well, absolutely, Finney, and if you get more sophisticated garbage is garbage, whether it comes packaged and tied in a ribbon, or whether you just throw it in an old paper bag and dump it somewhere, it's still garbage. You can read the New York Times, and that's my favorite punching bag, Finney, and I love to beat up on the New York Times. I'm sure they know me well. I mean, they will say things, they'll report things in a way that makes it sound so legitimate, but if you think about what they're saying, they're omitting what readers most need to know, and the most important stuff in a longer article. Most of them aren't that long, but once in a while there's an article that runs longer than the usual ones. The most important stuff gets buried 18 paragraphs into the article, where few people go that far and read it. People read the first paragraph or two or three, and most don't even bother reading anymore. So the kernels get buried, nobody sees them, and that's the way the New York Times operates. But the headlines distort, and the opening paragraphs leave out the most important stuff, and it's the same kind of propaganda system, just a little more sophisticated.
Yeah. And that story, Stephen, during the week about the disposition matrix, this streamlining and codifying of the drone assassination campaign led by Barack Obama in the White House every week, drawing up a hit list. I mean, with the way it was reported in the Washington Post, if it was a health policy or something, very sanitized and clinical, and the human, the blood impact is taken out of it. The criminality, the horrible impact on the human suffering, all that is removed. It's just presented to the public as if it's a health policy or something,
Well, absolutely. There really isn't very much reported in this country about drone wars abroad, and I have two articles already written, Finian, on what the administration, I guess, calls the disposition matrix. I call it Elevating Murder Incorporated to a higher level. I've got one that I title Obama's Disposition Matrix, and my other one that'll come out the next. I think the Disposition Matrix will come out tomorrow, Monday. And the follow-up will come out on Tuesday based on the research that the Washington Post did and my own research. And the second article is called Drone Wars. I've written, three, four times about the drone wars, including eyes in the sky spying across America on people, but using the same kind of drones, the Predator drones, Finian, so they can spy and not have these drones weaponized. But they could very easily weaponize them if they want to and shoot missiles down on Americans like they shoot them down on anybody else.
Yeah, it's very sinister, Stephen. I mean, not only the technology, but the whole policy and the targeting of people, I mean, it's getting wider and wider. What are very loose, these criteria, not that they were ever tight or warrantable, but I mean, you know, anybody who's deemed to be a suspect or an opponent, that could be just a political opponent, but you know, so the scope for carrying out these assassinations are just becoming wider and wider, and it's very subjective and very political. I mean, anybody who's just considered a threat in a very subjective determination is a legitimate target, and that is very, very worrying for everybody. I mean, for American citizens, for everybody around the world, you know, it's the collapse in morality and legal process is very sinister.
It's very sinister and very destructive, Finian, and I say it repeatedly. Yeah. There is no country in the world that threatens humanity more than America, and it doesn't matter a week from Tuesday whether candidate A or candidate B wins. The same beat goes on, the same dirty system, and it's very ugly, and literally, it won't really matter very much whichever one wins, whoever controls the Congress.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit worse with Republicans and Democrats. But the Democrats are so far off the edge of decency and morality and lawfulness that, again, the differences are too minor to matter, and most Americans are too indifferent or dismissive or whatever, not to really be paying attention the way they should be. And that's the reason these people literally get away with murder. They're more concerned about who'll win the big games, whatever the games may be on any day of the week, as opposed to their own welfare. And that's why these scoundrels get away with these horrendous crimes. And coming up at the end of this year, beginning of next year, 2013, they'll be hammered. We discussed this on the program yesterday. They'll be hammered over an extended period of time with trillions of dollars, maybe around $4 trillion, I think it's going to be more than that, trillions of dollars in domestic spending cuts. It'll come right out of the hides, mostly of the people who need these things most. Vital domestic programs are going to get hammered, so the bankers can keep being bailed out, so the corporate favorites can keep getting their multi-million dollar or billion dollar subsidies, so the warmongers can keep fattening their bottom lines. That's what the dirty game is all about. Trillions of dollars to them, but we're broke for the basic needs to be taken care of at home. And again, Obama is as bad as the rest of them. I think I've used this phrase several times in articles, Finian. He did the impossible. He did the impossible in almost 4 years in office. He exceeded the worst of George Bush. I mean, Bush was worse. Clinton was worse than Reagan. Bush was worse than Clinton. Yeah. And Obama is worse than Bush. So if Obama 2 or Romney 1, either one will be worse than Obama 1.
It's really it's quite bad. It's tragic, really, when you look at the American presidential debates. You know, it's so evident that it's really a presidential puppet show. I mean, both candidates, the only candidates that the voters have a choice of, really, are completely, they're just clones of each other and servants of the elite, the financial elite, the corporate elite, and it's really ironic and tragic that America, that claims to be the home of democracy or the pinnacle of democracy, and yet it's this complete inverse. You know, there's no such thing as democracy in practice. Both presidents are puppets of the rich. They're bought and paid for, and whatever vote you cast for either candidate, it's just it's inconsequential, really. You know, there's no possibility to affect change through that system, the two-party system. It's really just one party, isn't it? You know, when you analyze their commitment to the elite and the war agenda, the criminality of foreign policy, assassinations, drones. I mean, it's just the most identical, really.
it's a one-party state, and there's no question about it, and America absolutely is not a democracy. America not only doesn't tolerate democracy abroad, it doesn't tolerate it at home, and throughout the entire history of this country, not a single day of democracy ever existed, because the country wasn't designed to be a democracy. One of the great myths that people simply don't understand, but you can go back and you can see the way the system was designed, and I've written a fair amount about it. Literally, the founders wanted nothing to do with democracy, and I mentioned that the second president of the country, John Adams, and the first chief justice of the Supreme Court, John Jay, both said about the same thing, that the country should be run by the people who own it. That's the kind of democracy America has. And, of course, they knew nothing about television or money in politics and billions of dollars spent on elections and buying them and campaign contributions. Those things didn't exist then. But now that it's gotten so sophisticated that money talks. You know, $1, one vote. So you and I have pennies in our pockets compared to the big boys, and they have billions of dollars, so there's no way we can outspend them, and if you can't outspend them, you can't beat them. So we have a money corrupted system. The elections are completely fraudulent. Why anybody would vote Republican or Democrat, I absolutely don't know. It not only is throwing your vote away, it literally is making a fool out of yourself, because you, unless you benefit directly from what they do, if you're getting handouts from them, well, you should support them. You know, there's stuffing your pockets, so you know you give them your vote. But ordinary people, working people, who struggle every day to make ends meet and have a harder and harder time all the time, these people, I just can't imagine why they would support either party that has done such grievous harm to them, and they plan such worse things ahead. Either one of them, there's already been secret backroom deals on what they're going to do come right after New Year's. You know, when they'll announce it and how they'll announce it, I don't know, Finian, but they already have the dirty deal struck, and it's going to come down like a hammer.
But you know, Stephen, the analogy the point that you opened the show with about the mainstream media, you know, the analogy with the voting system is that, you know, millions and millions of voters are just switching off. They're turning off. They're not even participating anymore. And I just, you know, just like the media, the mass media, ratings going down, the readership going down, the circulation going down. Likewise, I mean, the electoral system is just being ignored, you know, because people are realizing that there's nothing in it for them. So it will be interesting to see how that pans out, you know, if that trend keeps going. But you know, Stephen, what I find really pathetic, the last debate was supposed to be about foreign policy, and you know, there was such a convergence in the two candidates. I mean, they're close anyway, as we were saying, about domestic policy, economic policy, but even on foreign policy, more so on foreign policy, I mean, they were just singing off the same hymn sheet. Maybe that's the wrong choice of phrase, or hymn sheet, you know, considering it's a diabolical position they both have. But, you know, for example, drones, you know, Romney kind of endorsed Obama's policy on drones, said he would even use more of them on Iran. You know, we were congratulating each other about crippling sanctions against people in hospitals, you know, children, elderly, the weak of the Iranian society being hurt. Like, you know, it's a crime against humanity. And yet both candidates were seeing this as a worthy endeavor. Syria, again, you know, the wanted, you know, more weapons to be sent to Syria, or you know, keep the whole pot boiling in Syria, massive suffering again. So it's really, you know, pathetic and heinous, you know, that these two guys running for the most powerful office in the world, and they're singing the praises about assassinating people, causing, you know, state terrorism let loose on foreign countries, and that's the descent of morals and the American political class.
Indeed. Oh, excuse me, Finian, indeed so. The ruling class in America is so corrupt, so venal in so many ways. And there's so many strands that we could talk about, Finian. My goodness, whether it's this one that just popped into my mind with the horrors that are going on in Bani Walid. Russia proposed a statement, not a binding resolution. I don't know how you could have a binding resolution on this. I suppose they could, but a statement condemning the violence going on in Bani Walid. And I try to find a text of it, but I couldn't. And I guess if it doesn't pass, there isn't an official record of it. But I just I was able, based on news reports, to quote a couple of snippets from it, basically just condemning this violence and having unanimity in the Security Council to come down against it. Well, the statement was rejected because Washington blocked it. In other words, Washington wants the genocide to continue unimpeded.
That really is illustrative of how criminal the American government is now. I mean, it's just overt and open, you know, in its criminality. It's absolutely no shame. But, of course, I read an article recently with a guy called Mark Robertson, a very talented, informed author, and it was really Mark's work on the peace on Libya. But, there is actually quite a strong resistance in Libya against the NATO regime, the NATO installed regime, but the mainstream media are completely ignoring that reality. And Bani Walid is just underlying that point. I mean, it's a stronghold of the former government. Muammar Gaddafi had a lot of support in Bani Walid, and this just seems to be a mopping up operation or a genocidal operation to wipe out the last vestiges of the previous government regime of Muammar Gaddafi, which actually was quite popular. He had a popular mandate, and it was only because of the NATO firepower in 7 months of bombardment that toppled that government. So the whole onslaught on Bani Walid that you're mentioning there very much is consistent with the NATO subversion of that country. It's just continuing to wipe out any vestige of resistance, and there is quite a formidable resistance from what I can tell in the country, and they really want to just wipe this out.
Oh, absolutely. That article was absolutely magnificent, Finian. I mean, you told the story of what really happened in Benghazi when the U.S. Ambassador Stevens was killed. Explain to the listeners what really happened. What they get through the U.S. media is a bald-faced lie from A to Z, and they're still hammering on the same story here, Finian. I mean, the same lies are being repeated over and over again, and they're trying to create a scandal for Obama because, you know, there's an election coming up here a week from Tuesday, so they want to pin what went on Obama. Well, you know, I mean, the Libyan war should be pinned on Obama, not so much what happened to one ambassador, but it was the green resistance, the resistance fighters that killed the ambassador. Tell that story, Finian.
Well, as I say, I have to acknowledge the co-author to that piece, Mark Robertson, who we began a correspondence, and Mark had uncovered a lot of evidence to show that the resistance, the green resistance, it's called the terminology, the green resistance, it's supportive of the Muammar Gaddafi's government, and they're either supportive of that previous government, or if they're just completely, just rightly defiant of the NATO subversion of their country. They mightn't have been very strongly supportive of Gaddafi previously, but many Libyans are defiantly resistant to this subversion of their country. I mean, after all, Stephen, Libya had quite a high standard of living by African standards, and for all his faults, Gaddafi's faults, he did seem to have a quite beneficent government, providing infrastructure and good standard of living for the people. And then NATO come in and they bomb the hell out of the place, reduce it to back to the Stone Age, and they've got very minority group from the east of the country has now taken over the government. So the resistance is is quite tenacious in Libya from our research looking into the activities of the resistance. I mean, it's not a picnic. There's very heavy violence going on from the resistance carrying out bombings of installations and assassinations. But in military terms or resistance terms, it's posing a serious challenge to the NATO-installed regime. So the NATO-installed regime and the NATO powers, the patrons, want to extirpate this resistance at all costs, because to let the resistance grow really deflates the whole propaganda narrative that NATO powers helped the Libyans realize democracy in a kind of a simplistic Arab Spring sort of narrative. So if the resistance was to gather more legs, if you like, more strength, posing a clear challenge to the NATO-installed regime that's installed at the minute, this would confound the Western media propaganda. So the resistance has to be exterminated ruthlessly, this would explain the onslaught on Bani Walid, because it's a stronghold of the Gaddafi, the former government. That's how I see it, Stephen.
Well, very definitely, and the resistance is very strong. Libya is a very tribal country, but you've got disparate elements that can be in conflict with elements elsewhere, but who knows how many? But there is an extremely strong resistance to the Western imposed, mainly the U.S. imposed puppet regime. It has no legitimacy whatsoever. It's basically it's like the Afghan government. Hamid Karzai, a former CIA operative and with connections to Union Oil Company, he's little more than the mayor of Kabul. So you've got the so-called Syrian government. So they're no more than the government of Tripoli. They don't have any authority. I mean, even people in Tripoli want nothing to do with them, the majority of people there. And outside of Tripoli, they have nothing to say about anything. So unless you bring in the Marines or whatever, I mean, people are going to do what they'll do, and they simply want to get rid of this occupying terror and start rebuilding their country, which would take many years at best if the conflict stopped right now. I mean, Libya was peaceful. Gaddafi provided wonderful social benefits. They're all gone. Now I just can't imagine that the depths of poverty and homelessness and human misery that simply did not exist under Gaddafi, and destruction everywhere, and what's going on in Bani Walid. I mean, they're literally destroying an entire city of 70,000 people. I don't know how many are alive or dead, but I imagine the death count is in the thousands, or it certainly will be before this thing ends. But the killing is going on around the country. And again, none of this gets reported. So you've literally got a war going on, and it's like, not only does the war not exist in the U.S. and Western media, but to a large extent, the entire country doesn't exist.
Yeah, I know it's well said, Stephen. But I think your analogy with Afghanistan is spot on. I mean, 11 years after that, fiasco, began. 11 years. I mean, the NATO forces, the US-led NATO forces, are up to their necks in trying to hold any position in that country. I mean, this confounds again the narrative that, the American-led NATO occupation of that country was to root out, really recalcitrant, fundamentalist, backward, despot. I mean, if we look at it from this perspective, that people are, in the Afghan people, in their own way, are just resisting a foreign occupier, a criminal invader of their country, then what's going on in Afghanistan makes a lot more sense than the official narrative. And likewise in Libya, if there's the resistance, again, it makes more sense. It's more logical analysis of what's going on than the official narrative. And again, as I said earlier on, Stephen, that's why the resistance must be crushed before it, from NATO's point of view, gets out of control. But I think, Stephen, we're moving into a world where of course, like, laws are being broken all around the place and wars. I mean, we've got how many wars going on simultaneously? And also another feature is this use of proxies, these kind of jihadis and al-Qaeda type, these mysterious groups. The NATO forces, the American-led NATO forces, government seem to be using proxies a lot more.
Oh, indeed. Finney, let me interrupt you. The music means a break. Hold your thought and then pick up on it as soon as we come back. Welcome back. On with Finian Cunningham. Finian, pick up where you left off, and then also let's talk about what you've written about Bahrain lately. And I guess you haven't been there recently, but you certainly spent some time there, and also about Mali. But pick up where you left off.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, you're mentioning about the situation in Libya, Bani Walid. In Bahrain, there's a similar situation going on. There's a siege of a village called Eker, E-K-E-R is how they spell it. It's about 20 kilometers south of the capital, Manama. I mean, Bahrain is only a small island, so 20 kilometers is quite a distance down the coast. There's a kind of a strange incident about 7 or 8 days ago where a policeman allegedly was killed in an alleged terrorist attack, a bomb attack, some kind of explosive device. This policeman allegedly was killed in his name. But why I keep using the word allegedly, because the Bahraini regime for decades, they're the masters of fabricating dramas and framing up people. Dozens of Bahrainis down through the years have been framed up on alleged terrorist activities and killings of security personnel. And I'd love to get into some of the examples, Stephen, to illustrate the lengths that this regime will go to politically prosecute the pro-democracy movement. But anyway, the latest incident, about 8 days ago, a policeman allegedly was killed. The regime then surrounded this village of Eker, and they cut it off for the good part of a week. People were not allowed in or out. Even medical services were not allowed in. People who tried to bring food to the village, for the residents, they were prevented from entering. In fact, three human rights defenders were detained, arrested, because they tried to break the siege. The police forces are firing massive amounts of tear gas into homes, and it's arresting people, breaking into houses, smashing up houses, taking people into prison, and it's par for the course, really. There's nothing that unusual about what the regime is doing. I mean, they're using massive amounts of tear gas all over Bahrain, and especially the Shia villages, which tend to be supportive of the pro-democracy movement. Smashing into homes at all hours of the day, all hours of the night, dragging people away without warrants, detaining them and unknown whereabouts, torturing them, and then prosecuting them with the trumped up confessions. And this village in Eker is certainly under the heel of the regime. Now, why the regime is doing this is probably because they're trying to coerce the population into accepting a dialogue process, dialogue that is the dialogue is really framed by the regime. to accept the regime, to not at all change the unelected monarchy, the dictatorship, but to produce a sort of a so-called settlement in which the monarchy will still will retain power. Now, the regime, the people of Bahrain are not buying this fake dialogue, a dialogue that is endorsed by Washington, by the way, and London. I mean, Washington and London are pressurizing the Bahrain people, the opposition, to enter into this dialogue. But the people won't have any of it because they know they've been fooled, tricked, deceived so many times down through the decades by this regime. They do not want to tolerate any remnant of this regime. They just want the regime to be replaced by an elected government, a democratic government. So by being so resistant to the regime, defiant of its coercion into this political process, the regime now is increasing the use of state terrorism through their security forces, harassing, holding a village under siege, harassing people, and to try to coerce the people into surrendering, if you like, to the dialogue process that's ordained by the regime, and in that way the regime can revamp itself and just really more or less retain the reins of power. So that's what's going on in Bahrain. Now, what is really disgraceful is that the Western media is pretty much silent about this as usual. The Western government, I mean, Barack Obama, in the presidential debate, I saw a quote where he said that America was on the side of democracy in the Arab Spring. Well, I mean, that is just a sick joke because in Bahrain, the American government and the British government have done everything to support the dictatorship and to thwart the pro-democracy movement, the peaceful pro-democracy movement.
They sure have, Finney, in the Bahrain story, which is really a nightmare that's gone on since the winter of 2011, day after day, courageous people protesting nonviolently, getting brutalized, getting killed, getting imprisoned, getting tortured, going through kangaroo court proceedings, doctors who treat patients in the main hospital in Manama, the capital of the country, tiny country. They're prosecuted. Imagine a doctor gets prosecuted for doing his or her job, or a nurse, or an orderly, or any other person in the hospital, and the police come in and they haul patients out of beds, and they arrest the staff, and it's a non-story in America, and I think across Europe, it really is shocking and disgusting, Finian.
Yeah, I saw it, Stephen, maybe some of your listeners have heard us talking about this. I saw it with my own eyes, Stephen, how the doctors and the nurses were, struggling to cope with hundreds of injuries from the security forces, the Saudi-backed security forces. And they were doing a really fantastic job as a humanitarian. And for that, as you say, Stephen, they were immediately, when the regime got the upper hand on the peaceful pro-democracy movement, the doctor, the first place that they cracked down on was the hospital, the main public hospital in Manama. And the doctor and the nurses were swept into prison and prosecuted. I mean, absolutely, disgracefully. I mean, it's an abomination that the medical staff who are carrying out their ethical job are then persecuted for it. But I have to say, Stephen, please cut in if I'm going on too much or you can't hear me very well, but the regime, the Bahraini regime, the Al Khalifa unelected dictatorship, I mean, officially it's called a constitutional monarchy, but really it's an absolute monarchy. I mean, they have a Mickey Mouse upper house that's all appointed by the king and the Al Khalifa family. So there's no democracy. It's a dictatorship. And Washington and London are just joined at the hip with this dictatorship. So it's really quite an eye-opener for the American public and the British public, every decent person around the world, to see the true colours of our governments, the Western governments, the American government, the British government. I mean, who are they really in bed with? Who are they most comfortable with? It's dictatorships, in Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia, and the other parts of the Persian Gulf. That's what makes American style capitalism work best. It's having a dictatorship that cracks down on people who don't have any rights. There's no dissent. There's no worker rights or the basic human rights. That's what facilitates capitalism optimally, and that's who the Western governments are in bed with in the Persian Gulf, and that's where the Western governments are going themselves. I mean, we're talking about this previously. The complete decline in democratic rights in America and across Europe. The regimes, the governments of the West are moving, towards the dictatorships that they support in other parts of the world. I'll have to say, Stephen, the Bahraini regime, the lengths they will go to thwart peaceful civilians, the pro-democracy movement, it's just really amazing. I mean, they will. I do believe, Stephen, we might have the time now to evidence this, but I believe that they will fabricate even the death of policemen. I mean, how the policeman will end up dead, I don't really know the answer to that. But it's been said to me, and with evidence, that accidents can happen to certain members of their police. So they have a dead man's identity, and then they pin it on a hapless group of youths from a Shia village. And the legal system, well, you can't even call it a legal system in Bahrain. I mean, it's an al-Khalifa court. They can get the result that they want. Well, they torture the detainees first. They'll torture them, mercilessly. I mean, the techniques that they use are like scientific. Now, they will get their confession. The youth will go through the court system, and they will be convicted of murder. This has happened before many times, down through the decades, Stephen. And, one example, if I could just cut me off if I'm going on too far. In the year 2010, this is before the outbreak, there was a group of men from a village called Mahamir, not too far from Ecker, south of Manama, and these men were prosecuted for the death of a Pakistani national. He wasn't in the security forces, but this man ended up being killed. How he was killed, we don't really know, but I believe he was killed by the regime. Then they pinned it on these guys from the village of Mahamir. Initially, there was 10 of them prosecuted, eventually seven, the final number was seven, three were acquitted or something. But seven guys are in prison for life for murdering, allegedly murdering this Pakistani, poor Pakistani guy. And the regime does this all the time. And this is a way of terrorizing the people. You see, the people are completely at the mercy of a despot. They can go into any village, they can round up a group of men, they will prosecute them with some trumped up crime, and they will put them in prison for life. Now, that is, an extreme, state terrorism. That's what the regime is doing to the people of Bahrain. And in that way, they are trying to get the people to submit to the magnanimity of the regime, to engage in the regime's dialogue, their ordained dialogue process that will result in the regime being kept in place, maybe under a kind of a term that constitutes of democracy. But that's what's going on, Stephen.
Oh, I do know that's what's going on. And to me, whether we're talking about the people of Libya, Finian, or the people of Bahrain, these are some of the most courageous people I know. I mean, they're being brutalized on a daily basis. Their protests are nonviolent. And no matter what these regimes dole out against them, they just keep coming out and they keep struggling. All they want is to be able to live free in their own countries. They don't want to go to war with anybody. They don't want to commit violence. They just want to live normal lives, and they want a government that serves everybody, not just, you know, the rich people in the country, which is what the Bahrain fascists do, and what the puppet government in Libya wants to do, exploiting the countries brutally, exploiting the people. And these people want their freedom. They want their liberties. They want to be treated like human beings. Everybody deserves that. And in response, they get brutalized by these regimes, but they won't quit. I wish Americans had half the courage that these people have.
I mean, the shame is that the country, it's only a small island, and the oil reserves are minuscule compared to Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's a fraction of Saudi Arabia or the gas reserves of Qatar. But for the size of the island, for the size of the population, that the society should be very comfortable, very high standard of living, if the wealth was used democratically and distributed egalitarianly. You know, it would be a very very healthy, very wholesome society. But really tragically, I mean, most Bahrainis live in really squalid housing, overcrowded, where you have several generations under one roof. Terrible, terrible housing conditions. Very little work because the regime brings in cheap labour from India and Pakistan and other Asian countries. So the Bahrainis don't even, they're not able to get work. So you've got a lot of unemployment, a lot of squalid housing in an island that really per capita should be, very, very comfortable and, a very salubrious lifestyle for everybody. But all the wealth is just trapped by the Khalifa elite, which over the centuries has kind of multiplied, spawned to a couple of thousand individuals. But they really just, have all the wealth. It's like a mafiosa. They just keep the wealth of that country among themselves. And shamefully, the majority of Bahrainis are just living in appalling conditions. So this underpins why the Bahrainis are so determined to have an elected government. I mean, they really are so determined about it, and they're not going to give up. I can only second what you said there, Steve. I mean, they're the Bahraini spirit and their culture, their character is ever so civilized and polite. I mean, I was among them. They would share the last bit of bread that they had with you, or if you went to their house, they would make a big ceremony with what little they had. You know, they would try to give you tea and food. They were very, very generous people and very open. They didn't know who I was. I mean, I could have been a spy for all they knew. I mean, but they were very open and very receptive, very welcoming, and they wanted to just explain to somebody from outside the country what was going on, the history, the deprivation, the inequality, the repression. They just wanted to tell the world this, because they're not getting any media coverage. So I can only just wholeheartedly second what you said, Stephen, prior to me about the Bahraini spirit and their decency,
And when you talk about poverty and human need, Finian, you could say the same thing across the region, whether we're talking about Algeria, Morocco, whether we're talking about Yemen, Somalia, on the Horn of Africa, close to where you are. Well, you're in that general area, but Somalia, Djibouti, a tiny country that has the major U.S. drone base, that'll be in my Tuesday article, a major drone base that literally they're flying drones around the clock and murdering people from this tiny base. The base, I believe, is at the Djibouti International Airport, and the military has taken over a big part of it. But this goes on. Egypt, Jordan, one country after another, just appalling levels of poverty and human deprivation, and the government doing absolutely nothing, and the so-called Arab Spring. It certainly isn't a term that came out of the Middle East. It's a Western-invented term, mainly a U.S.-invested term, and conditions today compared to a year or 2 years ago, if anything, they're worse, they're not better. So what kind of a spring is that? It's been winter 2 years ago. It's been winter all along. It's winter now. It's just absolute misery. And when people complain, nonviolently, they get their heads bashed in. And America supports all of this, supplies weapons, supplies funding, supplies all kinds of things. So America has got its dirty hands all over this stuff going on. And again, these are non-stories in the U.S. major media. These things literally don't exist because American media won't report on it. Can you talk a little bit about Mali? You wrote an article about Mali. It looks like America may get its dirty hands in there, too. Finney, are we still connected? Oh, dear. If we lost him, maybe we can get him back on the line. Well, Finian knows more about Mali than I do, so I can talk more about Libya and what's going on in Israel, Palestine, and so many of the things that I write about and the horrors that are going on right here. Of course, there's an election in America. Oh, we just lost Finian. Let's see if we can get him back for the last couple of minutes of the program. But, of course, a week from Tuesday we have an election, and it really isn't an election. There's a selection. There's a coronation, and I think the result is already decided. The big boys, the money boys, the money power that controls the country and controls the world. But in America, of course, they decide who'll win, who'll lose, and I think they already know. They just haven't told us. So they'll go through the motions of whatever's going to happen a week from Tuesday. But the polls show things very close. Well, you know, it could be one candidate A. It could be one candidate B. The only thing I know for certain is that whatever the outcome, whatever name comes up number one as opposed to number two, the U.S. public ends up the loser. There is no question about that. That's the way the system is structured. I've written several articles on it. As far as the debates that took place, there were no debates. There was flim-flam. They didn't explain anything to anybody. In an article I said, they didn't edify. They insulted. Three insulting sessions that left out the most important things people need to know. And if either one of these characters got in a real debate with somebody in a place like the Oxford Union, they would have their ears boxed and made fools out of, because people who really know how to debate would have wiped the floor with either one of them. And both of them aren't stupid, but I don't think they're quite as bad as George Bush, who literally couldn't put a complete sentence together. And when he got into one of these so-called debates, they had a wire him. There was a wire strung down his back. That, you know, he was facing front, so you couldn't see it unless a camera picked him up from the rear. But he was wired for sound. He had to be fed answers so he could repeat them to people. But again, it was no debate, just canned expressions. And basically, these people agree on most everything that's important. Well, I guess we haven't gotten Finian back on again. I'll apologize. He's had computer trouble today, too. So at least we had most of the program. We've got a couple of minutes left. We'll have these kinds of programs every week on Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm really dedicated to bringing on extraordinary people like Finian, who goes out on the front lines and literally puts himself, his body at risk by getting in a place like Bahrain. He lasted 3-4 months or so before I guess they finally caught on to what he was doing, reporting the truth. And they gave him the boot. They got rid of him from the country. He's lucky he didn't end up in prison. But some of them end up that way. And amazingly, a CNN reporter, Amber Lyon, spent time in Bahrain, and she got on video some of the stuff going on. And she actually got CNN International to air some of it. And the Bahraini monarchy went absolutely ballistic when they saw this stuff. And they bribed CNN to pull the stuff off air and literally make infomercials for Bahrain, which is what CNN did. And I wrote an article about it, quoting Amber, and I called it Infomercials for Despots. Well, this goes on for other countries, too. I think Bahrain does it for the fascists in the state of Georgia. Not the U.S. state of Georgia, the one in Central Asia. This is what the U.S. media does. So viewers or readers, they know nothing. My goodness. You'll always get the truth on this program. I'm absolutely dedicated to truth. I'm dedicated to covering the most important issues people need to know about, to bringing on absolute first-rate guests from around the world. We'll do it again next week. We're on every Friday now at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And we're coming up to the end of October, getting into November, closer to the holiday season. I'll try to have fresh programs for you throughout the holiday season. If unable to broadcast live, I'll try to do it by pre-recording to get new programs on. And again, discussing the big things. Do tune in. Tell others about it. Follow PRN. Find out what's going on. Protect yourselves. Nobody else will do it if we don't do it for ourselves. And as I say always, make this a regular habit.